This is Sports Talk with Phil Kornblut, Chris Bergen, and Pat Daniel. Sports Talk is heard across the state on radio affiliates of the Sports Talk Media Network and is streaming live on sportstalksc.com, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. The South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number to call in is 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now, here are Phil, Chris, and Pat with tonight's edition of Sports Talk.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It is Sports Talk Media Network, on a beautiful Wednesday in the Palmetto State and here in the Southeast. Good to have you with us. Phil Kornblut on the road to Nashville for the SEC tournament, where South Carolina will play tomorrow afternoon. We have Pat Daniel back at our studios in Columbia. Chris Bergen from the Bergie Palace, where he has been keeping an eye on everything going on today. And Matt Smith will be joining us a little bit later from up in D.C., where tonight Clemson will play Boston College in their first ACC tournament game. Boston College a winner last night to advance to face the Tigers. We got all this going on and a whole bunch more. Clemson spring football continues. Dabo Swinney is going to meet with the media this afternoon. We'll try to bring some of that to you. We have got an update on recruiting for you. Going to hear from Everett German, play-by-play voice of the College of Charleston Cougars, won their way into the NCAA tournament last night by clinching CAA tournament championship, beating Stony Brook in a really close ball game, really good ball game. So the Cougars are back in the big dance for the second consecutive year. Great job for Pat Kelsey and the Cougars getting that done. And now we'll see if South Carolina and Clemson can follow suit in their respective tournaments. The MEAC tournament is also getting underway tonight. South Carolina State will be involved there. So we got a lot going on, plus your phone calls. You can reach us, take your calls at 888-898-2525. That is the South Carolina Education Lottery. Lucky number for you here on Sports Talk. Pat is standing by, ready to take your phone calls and connect you with us. We can get you right on the air as soon as you dial into us tonight. So let's welcome in Chris Bergen from the Bergie Palace as we look ahead to tonight with Clemson and Boston College. Chris, Tigers had a good ACC regular season, not great. Started out great, kind of was a roller coaster ride the rest of the way after that. Lost some games they maybe should have won, but they won more than they lost, and it was good enough to no doubt put them into the tournament. Scratch your head, how you figure a Clemson team with a much better record last year, especially in the ACC, 14 ACC wins. I don't recall what their net was about this time last year. Their net now is in the mid-20s. I don't recall what the net was last year. I do recall they won 14 ACC games, but I guess the scheduling, and Brad Brownell talked about this the other day, the out-of-league scheduling they did by putting in Alabama, by putting in Memphis, by playing Boise State, by playing South Carolina, that helped them. That helped them, no doubt about it, boost up their net ranking. And when they took some of the dings along the way in ACC play, you noticed they didn't have a free fall. When they took a loss, they might have moved a spot or two, but they stayed right there pretty much between 25 and 30.
Well, when you have road wins at Alabama and North Carolina, Phil, your net ranking is not going to move at all, except upwards. Clemson has, I think, in terms of resumes, two of the best road wins of any team in the country. That's the difference between this year's team sitting with, 21 wins in conference overall and not nearly as many wins in the ACC as they had a season ago, because they were dominant in the ACC last year, just 11-9 this year. But I think that the determining factor for them, no bad losses like they had last year, good quality road wins, as I pointed out, at Alabama and North Carolina, and then they've just been solid. Brad Brownell still campaigning to get them in, and he's talking yesterday. You heard the comments that we played from his Monday press conference. He was talking as if he's trying to still sell his team to the committee by not saying we should be in, but we're definitely in. We're one of the three teams in the ACC that's a lot to be in. So he's gone, you know, to the next level here of lobbying for his team by just basically telling the committee, you're putting us in, right? There's no question about this. And I clearly think both Clemson and South Carolina go in with entirely different mindsets, especially the Gamecocks. Clemson probably went into the ACC tournament last year thinking they had done enough if they could get a win or two. And then they beat NC State. And we thought, well, that's got to be enough. They beat NC State three times this season, and it wasn't enough, as we found out. The Gamecocks last year, the only way they were getting into the NCAA tournament was win the SEC tournament. They don't have anywhere close, I guess. I guess the pressure's not on them like it was last year, but an 11-win team, you didn't anticipate they'd have much pressure going to the tournament because nobody expected them to win the league. So maybe this year's Gamecocks team has a little bit different pressure than last year's did, but they're definitely in too. So it's going to be a fun selection Sunday around here because for a rare time, we don't have to sit and sweat to see if our teams get in. And now we know the college is going too. So we're going to have three teams into the NCAA tournament, which for a state that's not known for its basketball, we've got to applaud the teams because it's been a pretty good year.
Yeah, yeah. But you don't want to see it in terms of the league tournaments with one showing. You know, Clemson needs to go out and beat Boston College, a team they beat in the regular season, but it was a pretty tight ball game. But they need to go out and beat them tonight and then move ahead to Virginia. And then South Carolina, they'll get either Arkansas or Vanderbilt, probably going to be Arkansas. And either one, they beat both of them in the regular season, one on the road and one at home. And you don't want to start to take the shine off an excellent season by going one and done in your tournament. Now, win that game, and then Auburn is waiting for the Gamecocks on Friday. And we remember what Auburn did to the Gamecocks at Auburn.
At home, though.
Well, home court, but home court alone didn't make that much of a difference. I mean,
some,
but they got beat by 50 points. They weren't even competitive in that game, and they've got to figure out the matchups and all that kind of stuff when it comes to Auburn. But that'll come down the road. They got to take care of first things first. You know, if it's Arkansas, you always worry about Arkansas. You know, they beat Duke early in the year. They tailed off after that. They had a really disappointing season. But, you know, they are dangerous at any time to get it going. You know, Vanderbilt, another disappointing year for them. The Buzzards are circling around West End where Jerry Stackhouse lives, you know, wondering if he's going to make it to next season there. But they did beat Florida. You got to take notice of that. They did beat Florida in their last game. So you have to respect both. And we'll hear from Lamont Paris. He talked with the media in Nashville today. They didn't have formal press conferences after the team's practice. They had little gatherings in the locker room area. And we'll bring you some of that audio. Was something funny that you saw on the video?
It was. Yes, everyone needs to go look at the video, and we want to credit our colleagues over at Gamecock Central for posting it to YouTube. But if you look in the background where they had Lamont Paris, and it's basically in a hallway at some point, somewhere around the arena up in Nashville. But behind him, there's sort of motivational posters, for lack of a better term, that looked like they were put together by kindergartners. And if that's the case, it's really cool because it's sort of block lettering, you know, go Tigers, go Wildcats. It's every team behind him. It just looked funny. It looked like he was at a kindergarten and standing out in the hallway, you know, where they always post to, if you can think back to when your kids were in kindergarten and you'd go for a parent-teacher conference and you'd see the awards and papers that the kids had done posted on the bulletin board outside the classroom. That's sort of what this reminded me of. It just looked funny, especially considering it's a college basketball tournament. But if they had some kindergartens in Nashville do that, I'm awfully impressed because I thought it was cool.
I wonder if what you're looking at, I want to make sure I got the arena right. One of the arenas that we go in for a tournament, on the walls, they have areas where various acts who've been in that arena sign the wall, sign that area, put their autographs on there. We're talking about some of the big acts. I'm wondering if maybe that's what you saw in the background there. I'd have to go look at the video myself. To be sure.
Please. I'm pulling it back up. But in the background, he's got Tigers, and the placard is spelled out T-I-G and then E-R-S, and then Tigers underneath with an exclamation point. Then they have Arkansas directly over his right shoulder, and then over his left shoulder, it's C-A-T-S with stars in between the letters. I mean, it just looks like something a kindergarten, and I'm not knocking it because I think it's cool, but it just looks like something elementary school age kids would have done. And if that's the case, props to the SEC.
Yeah.
Because it's a great backdrop for his press conference.
Well, that's not what I was thinking of, so I'll take a look at that. And our phone number, 888-898-2525. Lines are open if you want to join us on this Wednesday night to talk about what's ahead in the conference tournaments. Talk a little spring football if you'd like, or anything else that's on your mind, 888-898-2525. So Florida State beat Virginia Tech 86-76. Disappointing season for Tech at 18-14. Probably going to go to the NIT. And Wake Forest beat Notre Dame 72-59. Wake is 20-12, 11-9 in the ACC now. They were 11-9 in the regular season. And, you know, I'm not sure they are back on the bubble. They got to maybe win another game to get back on the bubble, then win another game to maybe be a little bit more forward of the bubble. They're kind of hanging right there. By the way, you were telling me that you saw a story where before Coastal hired their new coach, that B.J. Mackey was one of the candidates that they talked to?
I think that was the case. I'm pretty sure he was on the short list. Now, I can't confirm because I couldn't find it, whether or not they actually interviewed him, but he was one of the candidates, at least being rumored about. Now, you never know who athletic departments actually talk with because they'll never tell you, and it's smart because you want to make sure if you're Matt Hogue in Coastal Carolina that Justin Gray was always our first choice.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it wasn't, but you don't want to make him feel like, well, shoot, I just took the job because I was the last guy left and they didn't have another option. You never want to do that. So I did see a couple of the rumors out there that BJ was at least on the short list. Now, what that means, I have no idea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was interested in the job. I think BJ, you know, BJ, because he's had no head coaching experience, he may have to find himself a Division II job. Even trying to find a low-level Division I job is hard when you've never been a head coach before and you still have limited assistant coaching experience, which I think, you know, he's had a few years on the bench, but still a somewhat limited career. He may have to drop down and become a head coach at a lower level, then try to move up and get a head coaching job that way. All right, some other finals today. Various tournaments. Xavier beat Butler 76-62 in the Big East. In the Big 12, BYU over UCF 87-73. The Atlantic 10, St. Joseph's over George Mason 64-57. In the American Athletic, the AAC, Wichita State over Rice 88-81. Atlantic 10, VCU beat Fordham 69-62, and Mountain West, Fresno State over Wyoming 77-73. In the SWAC, Alabama A&M over Alcorn State 75-63. Pac-12, hard to believe, the last Pac-12 tournament. Southern Cal having a terrible year, beat Washington having a terrible year 80-74. In the Big 12, TCU over Oklahoma 77-70. A lot of smoke out there about Porter Moser going to DePaul as their next head coach. I think he is
Why? Well,
he's from Chicago.
Yeah, I get that, but still.
Yeah, yeah. I think he has said otherwise, but his name's being tossed out there. And in the AAC, Temple beat Texas San Antonio 64-61. Okay, so you're up to date on the college basketball to the moment. Phone number 888-898-2525 is the number here on Sports Talk. And something else to touch on as we get rolling tonight. That is, yesterday Nick Saban was in D.C. to talk to legislators about the state of college athletics. I'm sure you've read his comments where he talked about his wife telling him right before he decided to retire, like, basically, what are we doing now? As he said, she put it, all they want is to be paid. And he went on to talk about how his locker room basically changed to where that's all the players talked about, where they were getting their next money. They were using money when it came to staying at Alabama or transferring, all looking for the next deal. And he's just said in his world, that didn't work for him. It was not what he'd been coaching for. It's not what he had built his program on. It wasn't what his foundation was built upon. And he was done with that. He didn't want to be in that kind of situation. Okay. Now, you know, the cynics out there will say, well, that's fine. You're making $11 million a year, and you don't want your players to make any money. Of course, now, you know, like everybody in his position, Sweeney, Saban, others, they all love the concept of NIL. But NIL is not going to cut it. I'm here to tell you, NIL is going to die at some point in time. It's going to fade away. There's too much corruption. There's too much misleading when it comes to the NIL world. In time, it will die. And I think that none of this will be resolved until the Supreme Court rules on whether or not college students who are athletes and playing for their teams and making money for their teams, are they indeed employees or are they pure students? Should they be treated like employees or should they be treated some other way? And based on our most recent rulings, I would say they're going to come down on the side of them being employees. Then that changes the entire game. Why don't we go? I'm watching the NFL free agency season, and it's fascinating. Yes, it hurts me as a Packers fan to lose Aaron Jones. It hurts me as a Packers fan to lose our starting safety. It hurts as a Packers fan to lose our starting right guard. Okay, you lose these guys in the pros. They get better deals. You've got to slash some salaries because of cap. But it works for these guys. They have people employed who do nothing but study the cap, do nothing but study the salary situations, and they're ready when the free agency season opens in the NFL. And to me, it's neat and it's clean, and it works. So in the case of the Packers, now you and Pat can talk about the Panthers, but in the case of the Packers.
Please don't make us.
In the case of the Packers, we signed Josh Jacobs, okay? 2022 NFL leading rusher. That made Aaron Jones, unfortunately, expendable as far as the Packers are concerned. We signed Xavier McKinney off the Giants, safety, which made our previous safety expendable. So players come, players go. Players come, players go in these leagues. We're just using the NFL as an example. They have them in all the leagues. It seems to work. What can we do for the colleges to get to that point? Because I truly believe NIL is not going to work. You can't keep going to your fan base and pandering for money and begging for money to fund this. That's not going to work. You got enough TV money coming in to where a system can be devised to where everybody can have X amount of money to use in a bidding process for the players. And the top players are going to get more, and the lesser players are going to get less, and the lesser players of those are going to get less. But they're all going to get paid. Instead of one person here making some money because, you know, he's got 8,000 followers on Instagram and the car dealership wants to take care of him, he's going to make his, but nobody else is going to make theirs. So that's where I think it's going to go. But what did you think about Saban's comments? Was he being self-indulgent when he talks about, I can't coach players making a bunch of money, yet I make $9, $10 million a year?
Well, he looks like a hypocrite. That's basically what he looks like. Anytime the coaches now come out and talk about how they just don't see how this system is going to work, paying the players when they're making $10, $11, $12 million a year, which is an exorbitant salary for what they do. Don't give me this how much they work. I can go find anybody on the street that works as hard as college football coaches and don't make anywhere close to the amount of money those guys do. I'm not begrudging them. Hey, they're getting paid what the market is worth and what the value of their job is telling everybody else the market value for them. But you can't come out and be upset about the players now trying to get their own when it's been made legal for them to do so. The only problem I have with your explanation, let's get rid of the name, image, and likeness title. shoot some transparency and say exactly what it is. It's pay for play. These kids aren't going out and cutting their own deals for the most part. They're just getting money. And I don't know what they're doing to get that money because we have no idea what they're doing. We don't know what name, image, and likeness is, but let's just make it what it is. It is pay for play, and that's exactly where we are now. The only way you're going to get to an NFL-type system, though, Phil, is you collectively bargain all that stuff. The players in the National Football League are represented by one union. They go to bat for them when they go up against the owners who represent themselves, and they work all this stuff out. That's the only way this is going to happen. And to be able to do that, you're going to have to first make these kids employees, and then secondly, allow them to unionize, which is coming. That's on down the pipe, not that far down the road. And once that happens, then you can start getting closer to an NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball model, because they'll be able to go to the schools and the NCAA or whatever governing body we have at that point in time and say, all right, this is what we deserve as football players, as basketball players, and the like, and let's work on a deal. Because until then, we're just going to have mass chaos, which is what we're dealing with now.
Guys, question for you while we're on this topic, if I may. Just trying to think back, because I'm with you guys 100%. Something has to change. This is not sustainable. Years ago, I guess now, I don't know how many years ago it was now, 7, 10 maybe, college athletes started getting a stipend, whether it be monthly or semester. You might know better than me offhand, Corn. I'm trying to find an article to give more details here. Who pays that? And where I'm going with this is if student athletes are already able to get monthly or quarterly or semesterly stipends from the university, I would guess, or where does that funding come from? Why is it that these student athletes are able to get this certain amount of money, but they can't just get a certain percentage? We can't have a collective bargaining agreement where they get a certain percentage of all revenues similar to professional sports. What is the cut line? And if so, why do we have a cut line where it's legal for these athletes to get a stipend, but not to get a larger sum of money that might do away with NIL?
Well, I remember that well, because it was during the Spurrier time at South Carolina when the NCAA passed that legislation. I can't give you the exact date, the exact year. It's like 2009, 2010, check there, somewhere in that neighborhood, because he came out, of course, very much in favor of it. And I remember being at practices and Spurrier you're talking about, you know, hey, today's the day the guys get their $3,500 checks or whatever. The NCAA approved these stipends as a way to try to quell the talk of paying the players. At that point in time, they started to feel the heat and hear the noise, and the lawsuits were starting to pile up, and people were getting antsy on the players' side and representing the players. They were making more and more noise, and so as a way to try to counter that and appease, the NCAA came up with this stipend thing. And they said, okay, look, you're going to get this stipend per semester. And if you are a need student, in other words, economically low, there are grants that you can get. So there's basically like $10,000 or $15,000 per school year that you can pocket, not to mention everything else that we cover, the entire cost of your attendance as a student. All of that added together seemed like a pretty good package in their mind, which I think it was, and I still think it is. But by the law, it's not good enough. By the law, it doesn't fit the legal standards that have been challenged, that the NCAA has been challenged on at every turn, and they have lost. So everything they've done has been illegal, and that's why the courts have shot it down. So at the time, that's why they did that, was try to appease people and stem the tide of that push to get to pay for play. But that hasn't been enough. Obviously, here, 10 years later or so, we're at where we are at with that. So want to talk more about this. We come back from the bottom of the break, especially from a Clemson standpoint, too. As I've come to think of Clemson, the sanctuary program in all of the NIL world. They are, to my knowledge, there might be others who maybe aren't as publicized as Clemson is. But, you know, in reading various reports from Clemson media about things up there, it's like Clemson has cocooned itself off from all this outside noise of the NIL world. And they're doing it the old-fashioned way still. Wink, wink. At least that's what they want you to believe. They want you to believe that at Clemson, we still recruit based on the values of education, producing the home man, winning championships the right way. That's the image being created. But is that how they're really doing it? And if that's how they're really doing it, how can they exist in this current climate? Pick up on that after the break. All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Talk here on the Sports Talk Media Network. Phil Kornblut, Chris Bergen, Pat Daniel on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. 888-898-2525, South Carolina Education Lottery. Lucky number for you to reach us here on Sports Talk. And a reminder, man, beautiful day, 80 degrees in South Carolina today. Made you think about the beach, didn't it? Time to get those plans in place for that summer vacation. Don't wait. All the good places will be gobbled up. Just give Jimmy Smith a call. That phone number is 843-237-4246. Next to the number to reach us on Sports Talk, that is the second most important number in the state. 843-237-4246. Your perfect beach getaway. The cool Atlantic is waiting for you. The beautiful sands of South Carolina beaches, the golf courses, the restaurants, et cetera, et cetera. It's all there. Pawleys Island, Litchfield, Garden City, Myrtle Beach. Jimmy and the staff can put you in a great place, great price, but you better act today. 843-237-4246. Give Jimmy Smith a call online at pawleysvacationrentals.com. Okay, 888-898-2525. That is the most important number to remember. Clemson beat Manhattan in baseball. Sweep that two-game series 5-1. Billy Bartolo gets the win, goes to 3-1 on the season. For the Tigers today. For the Tigers today, 5-9-1, left 8. For the Jaspers, 1-5-2, and they left 8. Tigers scored all 5 runs in the bottom of the first. How about that? And they did it with an RBI single, an RBI single, an RBI single, an RBI single. Well, there was a 2 RBI single and a 2 RBI single. So they got it all done in the – I don't know how it makes you feel as a coach. Love the way you started offensively, but for the next 7 innings, you did nothing at the plate.
Well, considering if you listen to Eric Backage the past couple of weeks talking about how they've gotten off to slow starts and had to find a way to come from behind, I'm sure he's thrilled with the way this game played out, especially when you can stack up 5 runs behind a pitching performance where your starter goes 5 innings and strikes out 9. I believe that was career high, if I'm not mistaken, for Billy Bartolo. And as I mentioned, he was terrific today, through 95 pitches, but he was solid throughout. I would guess, if you ask Eric Backage, even with the shortened game yesterday in 7 innings, he was probably happier about the way they performed today than he was yesterday.
Also today, you got Tennessee Tech leading Upstate 7-6. It's in the bottom of the 8th. North Carolina leads Rutgers 7-6, bottom of the 7th. LSU over North Dakota State 3-0 in the 5th. And you've got Notre Dame over Radford 11-6, top of the 9th. And Duke leading Rider 13-4. Bottom of the 8th. Okay, just to finish up my comments as I hit the break, and then we'll get to your phone calls, 888-898-2525. So again, at Clemson, you know, I'm calling it now the sanctuary program. You know, it's the place where if you, based on the way it's being portrayed up there, you know, if you want to go to play college football at a high level where the money is not the factor, it's the education, it's the holistic approach, it's the preparation of the man and the athlete where we don't worry about the money, you know, up front. That's not our thing. We're not buying you. Then that's where you want to go. But I think they're pretty much out on a limb by themselves on their own island in their own cocoon with that kind of thinking. Look, I don't believe for a moment that Clemson's not getting down and dirty when it comes to pushing money out there for players that they want, okay? But the people that cover their team, especially the recruiting side of it, will often write when Clemson doesn't get a player that they want, that they went after against, you know, equal level competition, they go somewhere else. Well, it's because they got outbid. It's because they didn't write the big enough check, or they weren't going to get involved in the bidding process. If you ask me, you can't have it both ways. You know, if you're going to lose players to the NIL game and not play the game, then you can't present your you can't complain about it. If that's the way it's going to be, you can't complain. You can't fret about it. If you're going to try and do it the old-fashioned way and get by on your own characteristics and your own culture to help win the day, and you win players that way, so be it. But I got to believe, Chris, knowing, you know, Clemson's history and the fact that winning championships up there is the utmost importance. You know, getting it done is getting it done. And I got to believe when it comes down to, well, decision-making time, that Clemson's right in there bidding with them like everybody else. I just can't believe any other way.
No, I would think that's probably true. And I don't know that we've heard differently. You know, if Clemson can continue to do what, as you sort of painted, their vision, their way of doing things, and continue to be successful on the field, then I don't know that anybody's going to complain. The problem is, what is successful now at Clemson? Was last year a successful season for 95% of the FBS programs around the country? Absolutely it was. For them, I'm not sure it was, because they're used to going to the playoffs. And now with the expanded field, I think, you know, they'll be one of the top 12 teams and get in. So maybe their way of doing it differently. It's always been the way Dabo has done things. He's recruited differently than virtually everybody else with the limited amount of offers they do, and will not offer anybody until what they come on campus to visit. I've always admired the way he's held his recruits to a different standard. Yeah, if you want to commit, that's fine, but you don't go visit anywhere else. If you want to keep visiting, don't commit here. And that's worked for him. So as he's watched this develop, I'm guessing he's probably thinking, you know what, the name, image, and likeness situation that we have here at Clemson is going to work for me, because everything else we have tried thus far has worked for him. And I don't know that you can argue that point, at least right now. Now, 3-4 years down the road, maybe we have a different discussion about them.
Well, I agree with you. I do admire the way Sweeney recruits, his organization, his neatness, his principles when it comes to recruiting. And, you know, it has worked for him over the years, and I'll give you that. They are very efficient from a recruiting standpoint in identifying players and going and getting them and getting them to visit. And they have a pretty high hit rate on players who make official visits and ultimately commit. They do a heck of a job there. But that was in a different era. And I'm saying that today they're missing on a lot of players. And they're missing on a lot of players because they're not paying enough. And, you know, they want to hold to the high standards that they think that they are at, which is fine. You can look at yourself a certain way and believe that's the case and want to live up to those standards while everybody else around you is groveling. That's fine. But if it starts eating away at your success, eventually you're going to have to cave and play the game like everybody else if you're not doing it already. And again, knowing Clemson's history and their mindset up there, they've always believed, do what we have to do to win. Do what we have to do to win. And I can't believe that that mindset has changed up there now. Let's go to the phones. 888-898-2525 is our phone number. We go to his close friends, call him Triple T. People like us call him the Angry Black Man, ABM. Welcome in, ABM. Triple T.
Good afternoon. How you doing, fellas?
Doing great.
First of all, I want to say something to Hank. Tell Hank you need to chill and stop trying to replay, whether it's football, basketball, or sports talk. Make your point and get off the radio. Get off the sports talk show. I heard him make that shout at me last night, but it's all good. Mm. Getting back to Nick Saban and Dabo, those are the two biggest hypocrites around college football. And before Nick, he's gone. I'm saying this. He was the highest paid, made over $11 million. If it wasn't for those players, he wouldn't have not 7 national championships. All of a sudden, I'm saying he don't want to get the kid to get paid anymore. He used to do it under the table. Now says he's doing above the table. He want to get out of the business. And Dabo, you need to chill. You know and I know what's going on, Clemson. Nothing changed. If you don't win, you're not cheating. And I never forget it. I went to a spring game after we had lost 5 in a row, South Carolina. And the word was, Clemson, we going back to where the way Danny Ford way of recruiting. So I knew what the buzzword was. So, you know, left it at that. So, folks, don't listen to Dabo. That's just a bunch of hogwash. Everybody's cheap, I'm saying this. Must remember, my son went to Clemson. So I know the deal, what's going on up there, I'm saying this. So, like I said, let him start losing again. You see what happened? He'll be out of there, and they'll get somebody else, do what they do to win. Like I said, I'm a Tiger fan, but long as Dabo there, my grandson can't go there. And he plays in North Carolina, hell of a football, defensive back. Can't go to Clemson because of Dabo. See you down the road. Triple T, Trash Talking Tiger. I'll always be a Clemson fan. Always will be. I'm saying this. Take care. God bless you.
ABM with another shot across the bow. Interesting thing here, though, and thank you, Oliver. Good hearing from you. You know, since the advent of the NIL era, and we're talking about Clemson and their way of doing things, of course, and Dabo Swinney has been exceptional, you know, great record and all that, the 2 national championships, but they have been in reverse ever since NIL really cropped up and became a big-time part of college football, have they not? Since they played LSU and lost in the national championship game, what direction has Clemson football gone in?
Well, I mean, backwards. If you're just holding it to, yeah, I mean, clearly.
Well, if you're holding it to
because
where
they haven't
were,
played for a national championship since. But
well,
yeah.
Not only that, they were down now 9 wins. They had 9 wins last season, including their bowl win. Well, I mean, that's they had been at least around, you know, 10 or 11 wins. They had been playing in at least New Year's Day games. But, you know, in their last, since they played in the Sugar Bowl, they've played in the Cheez-It Bowl, they played in the Orange Bowl. I'm sorry, let's go back. Since they lost to LSU, they played in the Sugar Bowl, and then they played in the Cheez-It Bowl, and they played in the Orange Bowl, which was not a playoff game, and they played in the Gator Bowl this past season. So is it coincidental? I'm just saying, I'm asking the question. Is it just the way it is? Is it just coincidental that this is happening while NIL has kicked in and others have picked it up? Or is it just the way it is in football?
It's a really interesting question. I don't think you can really answer the NIL question right now because we're still in the early stages and it's more difficult to ascertain. I mean, I think as Clemson runs out players onto the field, you watch them play as we all did last year. How many of those guys, name, image, and likeness or otherwise, do you think did not deserve to be playing? And if Clemson recruited somebody better than them, I mean, I looked at Clemson's defense. I'm not so sure there weren't 11 guys out there that could start for any program in the country.
I would not argue that point. Yeah, their defense was primo last year. And
they had two terrific running backs. I mean, a very good, serviceable quarterback. Now, maybe not the Trevor Lawrences and the Deshaun Watsons that they've had in the past, but they got those guys before name, image, and likeness, so I don't know that that's a fair assessment.
Their biggest drop off would be wide receiver.
Sure.
And you still have to wonder about quarterback, though the reports on Klubnik that you get from up there is that he's been sensational in the spring. The players are all talking him up quite a bit. There's no backup ready to go behind him should something happen to him. And let's just say he doesn't play well for whatever reason. Sweeney's hands are pretty much tied because they don't have another quarterback ready to go because he won't go into the transfer portal, John, to look for any kind of an experienced quarterback there. Of course, South Carolina's kind of in the same boat at quarterback, too. They're going to go into a season with an unproven quarterback and a backup who has started but is limited in what he can do. I mean, he's an excellent runner, not such a great thrower. He does have experience, Robbie Ashford, but you wonder about South Carolina and their situation at quarterback. Of course, they do have Luke Doty, who can also play some quarterback for them as well. But going into a season with an unproven quarterback is a dangerous thing. And you put him in the SEC, and you take him to Norman, Oklahoma, or for that matter, just take him up to Lexington, Kentucky this second week of the season under the lights. Now, you know, Sellers might rise above and play beyond his years and beyond his experience. But I think it's going to be hold your breath time for South Carolina going into this season. What do you think?
Wow, you're throwing out some really good football stuff smack dab in the middle of basketball season. I've got to transition, rewind my brain here. But yeah, it's a good question, and they'll find out. I mean, I think spring practice for USC is going to be critically important at that position. I mean, going into the spring, I think we all believe, and Shane Beamer's probably pretty much said that Lenore Sellers will be the starter quarterback. Now, the question is, does that change during the spring, or do they go into the fall? The clearer question will be, if Lenoris is the starting guy going into the spring when practice opens up here shortly, does he separate himself from the rest of that quarterback room coming out of spring? Or do they go into the fall thinking, yeah, Lenoris is the guy, but boy, we're not 100% sure. I think that'll be a fascinating battle to watch. That may be the most interesting thing about spring practice for either team, is where Carolina is with regards to their quarterback room.
No question about it.
The pecking order, you know, the pecking order of their quarterback room.
Quickly, let's go to Gamecock Larry before we get to the break. Gamecock Larry, welcome into Sports Talk. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I ain't worried about football and all that. Right now we worry about basketball and baseball.
Good for you, Larry. Good for you.
I'm getting ready to run back and watch the Gamecocks play 4 games in 4 days. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And Sunday afternoon, they will be crowned SEC champions. And I'm getting ready to get, I don't know what to call them, but I'm getting ready to that basketball coach down there at LSU. You know what, Kim? I kind of agree with you. I wish Cardoso would have pushed your Angel Reese to the floor. Davis Mills wiping her up off the floor, and when she got up, she said, "Run to you." And I'm telling you,
Larry, I just can't. Larry, I'm sorry. I just cannot condone female violence on this program. I just can't condone it. I can't believe you are going to statewide airwaves here and suggesting that we should have women, you know, punching it out with one another. And I just can't condone that.
I'm just saying. Kim Marcus says she wishes Cardoso would have pushed her Angel Reese to the floor. I'm just saying whatever she said. And, you know, I wish she would have, too.
See, there you
like
go.
Okay. I would love to see that. They'd have still been picking, I'll tell you what. And Dawn, the lady, daughter of the... Let me get off that. Let me finish what I was talking about. We're going to have 2 national champions in basketball at the same school maybe this year, but if not, for sure next year. But excuse me, I'm saying we're going to have it this year. And yes, ma'am, Kim Markey, you are a disgrace. You are a disgrace to Ladies College basketball.
Larry, I'm sure when she hears your words, she's going to have some sleepless nights knowing that she has crossed Gamecock Larry. She has crossed him, and you just don't do that. Larry's gone. Thank you, Larry. Send Larry off to night-night land. He does not like Kim Mulkey. I want to get him a blind date with Kim Mulkey.
I gather
can we do that? What if we can get him a blind date with Kim Mulkey? Larry, meet us over here at Hall's Chop House, and we've got a blind date for you. And here comes Kim Mulkey walking in. What do you think? Would he pick up the check? Would he run and hide? Would he take her by the hand and kiss her on the hand? We'll be back after the break.
Last year was a big year for Founders Federal Credit Union and our amazing members. A total of $30 million was given back to qualifying members in the form of loyalty bonus dividends, proving once again that it pays to be a Founders member. Founders is also committed to pouring time and resources into the local communities we serve. If you aren't a member yet, what are you waiting for? Join Founders today. Visit foundersfcu.com. Federally insured by NCUA. Membership qualification required.
George Bryan here for Tsunami Bar Sports, and some say the fun is in the winning. I say the fun is in the training. And Tsunami Robbie, what do you say?
George, we all know you get more done when you're having fun. This technology is different, it's engaging, but it's also a lot of fun to use.
Hi, this is Phil Kornblut. Be sure to click on the digital ad on sportstalksc.com and get 5% off any Tsunami Bar order using promo code BBB5. Don't wait, order today.
I'm attorney Jim Corbett. That's the sound of a big hit on you and your car or truck. I've been an attorney for more than 30 years, helping people who get injured in car wrecks and truck wrecks. If you have serious injuries, call Jim Corbett, 803-765-2968, or email me at jim@jimcorbettattorney.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T. I don't get paid unless I recover for you. Jim Corbett Attorney, for your best recovery from a big hit, 803-765-2968, or jim@jimcorbettattorney.com.
You've put in the work for your education. The extra early, extra late, extra, extra work. That's because you understand education opens doors to better pay, better opportunities, and a better you. Being educated about playing the lottery is no different. It helps you be a better player, one who knows when to play and when to take a rain check. The lottery's a game, so let's keep it fun. Learn more at sceducationlottery.com/better you.
Coming up on the top of the hour here on Sports Talk, let's go to the phones once again, 888-898-2525. It is Hank in Columbia with us next. Hank, welcome in. How are you?
All right. I thought you squeezed me into the portion where you knew the break was coming up.
Well, no, I'm trying to get you on before we have to take a break. I'm trying to be nice.
I'll tell you what. You just tell Oliver. Oliver tried to – he was so mad about my comments, he went and jumped and waited on to get on first, eh? If he'd leave me, if he could keep my name out of his mouth, I'd keep mine out of his.
Ooh.
I don't know why somebody would want to run around with all that godforsaken orange he has on all the time, but we'll leave that there. But Phil, you know, when you were talking about the NIL and how the money was good at one time with the scholarship and all that, we basically said it like Chris has said. The coaches were hypocrites. All of this got to the point when the coaches' salaries went from $3 million a year to coach a team to $11 million. And then the NIL popped up, remember, because the NCAA decided they were going to make money off of these video games, but using the players' names.
Well, part of it.
Yeah. Remember, that was the big that was the crux of the O'Bannon case.
But, you know, back when coaches were making, we say, just $2-3 million a year, I mean, who amongst us wouldn't want to be making $2 or $3 million a year
exactly.
now?
Exactly. Exactly.
But my point is, when they were making that money back then, that was huge money, yet we didn't hear that kind of a movement from people on the players' side saying, hey, now we need to be paid. Coaches are getting paid $1 million, getting paid $2 million. We need to get paid.
Well, Corn, I'm gonna tell you, I listened to another sports show that you know, you and your old buddies, and he has Ellis Johnson come on each week.
Mm-hmm.
And basically,
you can say Teddy's name on the show.
Yeah.
Saying Teddy's name on the show doesn't insult us.
Well, Corn, how we got there, Ellis explained how we got there. Ellis said it used to be a time the players went home half a year and did sports half a year. Now the players are there almost 24-7.
Well, they're demanding so much out of them. Should they demand less? But the players want to be coached. The players want to work all the time. Where do you find the happy medium? Top of the hour, we'll be back.
Welcome back to Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network. You can reach the guys with the South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number, 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now back to Phil, Chris, and Pat with the second hour of Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network.
Okay, welcome back. Sports Talk, Sports Talk Media Network. It's the Wednesday edition right here in the heart now of March Madness as things are happening all around us. College basketball tournaments everywhere. I'll be in Nashville tomorrow. Smitty is up in D.C. Follow him tonight as he covers Clemson on our X, also known as Twitter. And that is at SportsTalkSC and postgame on the website SportsTalkSC.com. He'll be one of the first to have the postgame with Brad Brunell and the Tigers up for you so you can hear what they have to say, see how their game turns out tonight against Boston College, and same tomorrow as I'm covering South Carolina against either Arkansas or Vanderbilt. So those two teams are certainly going to be in the NCAA tournament. One team we know for sure in our state, definitely in by virtue of going and winning their tournament championship on top of their regular season championship, the Cougars of the College of Charleston. And we welcome back to Sports Talk a friend of Sports Talk in every way that you can be a friend of Sports Talk. He is a friend of Sports Talk, except his only defect is he's a Lakers fan. Otherwise, we love him to death. The voice of the Cougars, the E-Dog, Everett German. And the Cougars beat Stony Brook last night to win the championship 82-79. E-Dog, welcome in. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Phil. Chris, glad to be with you guys.
Have you been able to overcome that one little deficit in your life, being a Lakers fan? Have you been able to work on that and overcome that?
Well, I was hoping you would refer to them as the Red Hot Lakers, soon to be top six in the West Lakers. But for right now, we'll just keep it as is.
There you go. Well, congrats to you and the program and the Cougars. You backed up the regular season title with the tournament championship. That's very sweet, especially in a one-bid league. What about this team is so special?
I just think, you know, they have so many different ways that they can win. You know, Charleston led the conference in scoring, averaging 81 points during the regular season. And, you know, as Coach Kelsey likes to refer to it, we've had a couple of tractor pulls here as of late, especially in the semifinal game against Towson, where they were able to dictate the pace and keep it, you know, in the 60s. And then, of course, last night, you know, they were able to get the win in overtime. But, you know, some games, Phil, Chris, it's Cougars are red hot. You know, coming into the tournament, our last three games of the regular season, we hit 15 threes in each of the games. And then, of course, the first two games of the tournament, I think we hit 12 combined. So some games, you know, we're shooting the ball well from the outside. And then, of course, sometimes, you know, you have to pound it inside to Berzovic and Policelli and Ben Burnham, you know, the kid out of Fort Mill. So, you know, this team is just very versatile. You know, size, great shooting. We're about 10 deep. Really don't lose anything when you go to that second five. You have the nation's leader in assist-to-turnover ratio with C.J. Bolton. So, yeah, it's just a well-rounded team and a team that just somehow refuses to lose and finds a way to win.
What have you seen from Pat Kelsey this season?
Man, you know, last year going 31-4, you know, it was hard to kind of follow that up. You know, we were the preseason favorites to win that. And, you know, Charleston actually started the season out, Phil, Chris, 1-3. You know, we had the loss to Duquesne up there in Annapolis, and then we lost the first two games in that Myrtle Beach Invitational there to Wyoming and also Vermont, finally beat Coastal Cal on in day three, and that kind of got things going. But for Coach, you know, just a masterful coaching job. You know, he didn't have Brian Larson, you know, who transferred to Charleston from Wofford, and Jalen Scott, Dalton Bowlen, like he had the year before. But, you know, able to go again into the portal, get the grad two, the D2 grad transfers that have come up huge. And it just took this team a little bit longer to kind of mold and get into that unit. But once they did, boy, has Charleston been red hot. I mean, the Cougars have won their last 12 games. So arguably, this is Coach Kelsey's probably best coaching job, at least while he's been at Charleston in the 3 years, just because it took a lot of mixing and matching and this lineup and that lineup. And finally, I think him and them staff, they finally got the rotation down, the pieces down, and Charleston's playing its best basketball at the right time.
Sure.
The voice of the Cougars joining us here tonight, Everett Derman, on the program. And Everett, again, congratulations to the guys. What a great win last night. And I obviously got to see you guys real early in the season as you were trying to mix and match pieces together. But the two things that struck me in the two meetings that Coastal had with college, first off, their ability to get on the backboards, which I knew was probably going to be a part of the team. And three-point shooting goes without saying. But also their inability to turn over the basketball. This is a team that's very stingy with the ball. And I would think that's got to bode well going into the NCAA tournament, where if you're not giving up extra possessions, you've got a shot to win any game in the tournament.
Absolutely. And that's where CJ Fulton, the transfer in, has a 4.36 now assist to turnover ratio, leads the country. The guy just does not turn the basketball over. He was the primary point guard, and then late in the season he had like a turf toe injury that forced Kobe Rogers, who, of course, won a D2 national championship last year. He had been coming off the bench. Kobe gets inserted into the starting lineup, and it really has been like night and day. So I actually talked about this on the broadcast last night. It's almost as Coach Kelsey, when you have Kobe Rogers, kind of have a, well, we'll use some state ties, almost like a Devin Downey type of point guard. You know, a guy that just wants to push the ball, put pressure on the defense. He's just so athletic and so fast. But then you bring in like a C.J. Fulton, which is 180 of Kobe. He is very kind of John Stockton-ish from the old NBA days. You know, just not going to turn it over. Always get the basketball to the scorers in the right position at the right time. You know, I think last night he finished with, I want to say, 6 points, six assists. He did have three turnovers last night, which, here's a stat for you. In the entire month of February, C.J. only had two turnovers. The entire month. So, yeah, so when you have that, and now he's starting to shoot the ball with a little more confidence, and he can shoot it, but he's just one of those pass-first point guards. So you're right, Chris. Charleston really doesn't turn the basketball over, definitely, and when they do, it's mostly like in dead ball situations, which doesn't allow a team to kind of get out and get those fast break points.
Only 9 last night, and going into overtime in their win over Stony Brook to clinch an NCAA tournament bid, and Pat Kelsey taking another team to the tournament. And Everett, have you had a chance to sort of look back and sort of mirror what Pat Kelsey did in his last 2 years at Winthrop and what he's done thus far in the past 2 years at the college? It's almost eerie. Similar record, conference titles in both the regular season and the postseason. When you look at what he's been able to accomplish in a relatively short period of time, do some of the stats just, are they mind-blowing to you? Because they certainly aren't to me.
It really is. I mean, Matt Roberts, when Coach Grant, who, of course, he has a big game tonight against Clemson, actually saw Coach Grant because the ACC tournament's in Washington and ran into a lot of those guys while we were up there. But when he left, you know, Matt Roberts, who I still say is arguably the best AD in the country, and he knew exactly what he wanted. He knew exactly what he needed. And really, he locked in on Pat Kelsey from the jump. Coach's energy and his passion and his ability to just really kind of embrace Charleston. I mean, he'll tell you that this is still John Kress's city, but what he's done for our city, which is his, you know, his motto, it's just remarkable. And so for him to do what he's done in 3 years, I know, you know, the last two is, like you said, at Winthrop, and even in year one, I mean, he got the job very late, and Charleston made it to the semifinals, lost on a controversial call to UNCW that year. And then, of course, the last 2 years, we've been able to win the title. So Coach is just a gem. I mean, he's solid. Of course, there's a lot of people in Charleston. We're definitely watching who's getting fired, who's staying, who's going. because obviously we don't want to lose, Coach Kelsey, because just what he's done for Charleston, the city, the community, he really has rallied everyone together. And, yeah, he's just a special guy. And so we just think the world of Pat, and hopefully we can go on a little run here over the next week or two, and, well, we'll just see what happens.
Yeah, well, that's the sad thing about a program like Charleston. If you go on a run, that's great for you guys. It also drives the value of your head coach up in the eyes of ADs looking for head coaches. And I was going to touch on what you just brought up, and that is, unfortunately for Charleston, his hometown area has got three primo jobs open. There's Ohio State, there's now Louisville, and there's West Virginia. Those are all right there, sort of more or less in his neighborhood. And those are all big-time jobs that can pay big-time money. And I think he's made no secret of the fact how much he loves Ohio. He especially loves, you know, Cincinnati, which is where he's from, big Reds fans, et cetera, et cetera. Yet he does have a great life living on the beach in Charleston and coaching at a great school, and he's building a great program. So at the end of the day, I'm not asking you to reveal anything inside, just your opinion. I mean, how torn might he be over a big offer from one of those programs versus the comfort level he has in Charleston?
Well, I mean, I think he lives over on Daniel Island. His family loves it here, and I kind of joked with some boosters this week in D.C. I'm like, hey, why don't y'all go and take Lisa and the girls and the kids, you know, just take them out for a nice dinner and really butter them up, because if we can, and they absolutely love Charleston. So that's the one thing about Coach. I don't think he would just leave, and granted, those are bigger jobs, but it has to be the right fit. It's kind of like when Coach recruits players, like, you know, he goes, yeah, there may be people that are more talented, but do they fit into what we do? And he's all about the ABCs, academics, basketball, and character. You can't have one of the three. You can't have two of the three. You have to have three of the three if you want to, you know, play for Coach. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's hard to – I often think if I were to come home to, you know, my wife and say, hey, I just turned down an opportunity to double my pay to do the same thing –
yeah.
I'd probably be living in Columbia with you, Chris, or Phil. I don't know which one would take me in.
K-Mac. He's got a room above. He's got a room above
exactly.
For you.
But for Coach, you know, yeah. And he said from day one, him and his staff, you know, Brian Coleman and obviously Mike Cassidy and Thomas Carr, they said from day one they wanted to make Charleston, you know, the Gonzaga of the East. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was 3 years ago. Now it's a little different because I'm sure coaches, he has to have options. I mean, he's one of the hottest young coaches, and I'm sure they've seen what, you know, he's done at Charleston. So, yeah, I mean, Louisville would be, you know, nice, I guess, Ohio State, you know, obviously West Virginia. But, yeah, I really don't see West Virginia would kind of really be a stretch. I just don't see Lisa and the kids saying, yeah, let's move to Morgantown, West Virginia.
It's a beautiful
Charleston.
Place.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Just not for, hopefully just not for the Kelseys. So,
it's
but,
not Charleston.
Yeah, so
I can promise you that, Everett.
Right. It is not Charleston. And, you know, and that's one thing I'm sure, you know, Matt Roberts, he'll do everything in his power should that, you know, situation come up to, you know, try to give Coach. But, you know, there's that limit. It's not like we're just unlimited money down here in, you know, in Charleston. So, but. Right now, Coach is not even, I would assume, and I can't speak for him. He's just worried about who he's going to be playing next week, which he'll find out on Sunday when the selection show comes on.
Yeah, you guys thinking, we'll let you go after this. Looking at the bracket, based on what you've done, I mean, I've seen you moved up to a 13. You think that's about as high as you're going to get from the committee
yeah,
when it
I
comes to?
Yeah, I don't think we, you know, we don't have a really big solid win. You know, we played well against Florida Atlantic at their place, led them by 8 with 8 minutes to go, and then kind of collapsed down the stretch. So without that really big win, and, you know, unfortunately the CAA conference rankings is not, you know, obviously we'd like for it to be higher, but it's not. So, yeah, I think Coach would be happy with a 13. A 12 would be nice, but I seriously, you know, doubt that, especially when you think about, you know, what we had going on. But a lot could happen over the next 2 or 3 days. You know, right now we do have the second longest win streak in the country, you know, at 12. So, yeah, we're playing well. So we'll just have to see. But, you know, I feel comfortable in saying that, yeah, coach is just glad, and the kids, they're just glad we're going dancing back-to-back. Ideally, you know, Charlotte would be good for the fans. Be just a nice little three-hour drive from Charleston. But, you know, I think everybody's consensus is just don't send us out to Seattle.
Yeah.
That's the one place we don't want to go.
Well, or double you up in Pittsburgh. I've seen Charleston in Pittsburgh with Clemson. So, yeah, double them up with either the Gamecocks or the Tigers, and a whole bunch of people will be there to root for each other.
Exactly. It'll be a Palmetto. And remember, we almost had that 2 years ago. Well, not 2 years, 2018, where we were in San Diego with Clemson as well. Mm-hmm. We ended up losing to Auburn, and, of course, Clemson won their opening round game. And I think that year they went to the Sweet 16.
Yes.
Where it was Clemson and Charleston in the same regional. So, you know, that would be nice. Or we need to share the spotlight with, you know, Coach Paris. Obviously, they're having a phenomenal season. But, yeah, we can get two Palmetto State teams. And don't forget, even Coach Martin, if the Bulldogs can get hot in the MEAC.
Yep.
You know, we could have four teams mm-hmm. from the Palmetto State, which would obviously bode well for us and make the Palmetto State look good.
Yeah, State's done a good job in the MEAC. E-Dog, we appreciate it. I'm a big Sacramento fan tonight, as you guys play in Sacramento. So let's go Kings. The closer you are to 500, the closer you are to missing the playoffs. So that's all I'm rooting for. Besides,
if you're scared, just say you're scared. Because the one thing that Tatum and Brown and Porzingis don't want is to have the NBA Finals, and they have to come to the Crypto Center.
Oh, the Crypto. What a name.
For the ageless wonder, that being the GOAT himself, LeBron James.
The biggest ball hog of all time. E-Dog, thank you.
Yes,
good
sir.
Luck in the tournament. We'll talk again.
Sounds good. All right, guys.
Thanks, Everett.
Appreciate you, man. All right. Everett German, voice of the College of Charleston Cougars. Appreciate him being with us,
Phil,
tonight.
We almost had a Palmetto matchup in round of 32 last year. Remember, Furman
yes.
and
mm-hmm.
the College of Charleston were locked in. They would have had the college figured out a way to beat San Diego State, which I just thought was a horrible matchup for them, and it turned out to be. But we almost had a situation where those two would have played together. And he mentioned the college with 12 straight wins, second longest winning streak in the country. Do you know who holds, if I'm not mistaken, the longest current winning streak in the country?
Longest
also
current?
From a mid-major.
Okay, let me just think. Longest current winning streak in the country. You're saying it's a mid-major. It's mid-major, longest current. I'm not Googling it either. I'm not like Pat. I'm being honest here. I'm not going to try to fake you with my knowledge. I'm doing the real thing here. Pat, do you know who it is without Googling it?
I'm sorry. I didn't even hear the question.
I'm going to say, since you're saying it's a mid-major, I'm going to say, Gonzaga?
Oh. That would be a good guess. No, it's if I'm not mistaken, it's James Madison.
Oh,
they've won 13
yeah.
in a row.
Yes, that's right.
And they have the best, the most wins, assuming they haven't been passed here the last couple of nights, 31 wins. And they'll probably end up being, a 15 or 14 seed, too.
Mm-hmm,
and they deserve much better, much like the college probably deserves better than a 14 or 15. This is a James Madison team that went into Michigan State and won in overtime to begin the season.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they've been terrific all throughout, and this is why when people keep talking about expansion of the tournament, I'm not in favor of it unless there is one thing: all the expanded teams are from mid-major leagues, so you would get more than just the college out of the Colonial. You'd get more than just James Madison out of the Sun Belt. You'd get more than XYZ out of ABC Conference. The only reason they want to expand is to help mid-level teams in the SEC, ACC, and Big Ten get a shot in the tournament.
Well, just like why are they expanding the football playoffs?
Exactly. Exactly.
So that the czar, Greg Sankey, and I said, I can't tell you how many years ago I said, watch Greg Sankey as he navigates through everything, positioning himself in the SEC, but positioning himself to be the king of football. And that's what he's doing. That's what he's doing. And he's working with the guy from the Big Ten who won't be the king. He might be the prince. He won't be the king, or maybe he'll be the joker, but Sankey will be the king. There's no question about it. And he's positioning his league and the playoffs, of course, to get more SEC teams. And he wants guaranteed spots. He wants guaranteed spots in the playoffs for multiple SEC teams and Big Ten teams. You know, Something just seems kind of wrong about that. That's something that seems just basically wrong. We got to go to the break, and we'll come back with more. Pick up on that piece of conversation. Recruiting is coming up. We'll hear from Lamont Paris as well. And also, some R.J. Mickens of Clemson, safety on spring practice with the Tigers. We'll bring a little bit of that to you as well. And maybe a little bit of this Mark Kingston previewing the start of SEC play. Got all that on the table coming up. And hopefully a check-in from Smitty up in D.C. as the ACC tournament rolls on this evening. Back in a moment.
This is Major Billy Downer with the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. Boating season is here, and as you get ready to go out on the water this spring and summer, make sure you have all the required safety equipment on board. Check for a sound device. A horn or whistle will suffice for most boats. Inspect all of your life jackets. Make sure they're in good condition and are the correct size for all of your passengers. If your boat is over 16 feet, you will need to make sure you have an approved throwable device on board as well. Remember, boating safety is no accident.
Hi, I'm Lisa Hostetler-Brown. Helping an aging loved one arrange for their care can be one of the most difficult things you will ever do. Fortunately, you don't have to navigate this maze alone. Lawyer Lisa's knowledgeable life care team can lead you down the right path. Visit LawyerLisa.com to see how we can help.
Call Lawyer Lisa. Experience the difference with Lawyer Lisa.
7511 St. Andrews Road, Irmo, South Carolina.
Every lottery ticket purchase keeps education in our state moving forward. In fact, the lottery has raised more than $200 million for state school buses to get our students to school safely every day. Then, the lottery helps those students go even further in their education by funding the Life, Hope, and Palmetto Fellow Scholarships. So remember, when you play the lottery, you're keeping South Carolina students on the road to success. Learn more at sceducationlottery.com/betteryou.
All right, folks, let's get started. Parents, thanks for coming. As many of you know, I'm Coach Mather. Tonight I want to talk about the season, of which I only have one expectation, that everybody gets stronger. When I say get stronger, I'm not referring solely to physical strength. Sure, we'll be in the weight room, we'll be running stairs, but we're also going to focus on developing mental toughness and grit. Because those are the characteristics that allow us to achieve greatness both on and off the court. So, how do we develop those things? By getting comfortable with a challenge. By cultivating the confidence necessary to overcome adversity in all forms. That's why I coach. That's my purpose. Every member of this team can lean on me. And I'll teach them how they can lean on themselves and each other.
This message presented by the SCHSL and the South Carolina Athletic Administrators Association.
All right, coming up on the bottom of the hour, and we will have recruiting coming up for you and a whole bunch more as we continue this Wednesday edition of Sports Talk. Got a quick comment or question. 888-898-2525 is the number. Let's go to Keith in Camden. Up with us next here on Sports Talk. Keith, it's good to have you with us. How are you?
Hello.
Hey, hello. Phil. Hey.
Hey, I didn't know I was getting on that quick.
We move quickly here on Sports Talk. It's either move quickly or get left behind. That's what happens.
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. All right, just quick question. First, I think there's some technical things going on the station, so y'all may want to check that out.
Okay.
But it's making, you know, every few seconds noise to where you can't hear you, but
which station? Which station are you listening
105,
on?
105.9.
That would be out of Sumter, I believe.
Yeah, it could be okay. On my end, but Where do you project us to end up? Talk about that a little bit, and y'all have a good evening. I'll get off the phone to let somebody else get in line.
Are you talking about the tournament?
Men's basketball tournament, yes, sir.
Like the overall NCAA tournament?
Yes, the SEC. What are y'all thoughts on that?
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, we'll have to address this on the other side as well. You know, the Gamecocks, depending on what happens this week, if they can get a win, I don't think they'll be any worse than a 6 seed. Haven't seen them projected anywhere near Columbia. You know, mostly been Omaha, sometimes Spokane. I think I've seen them in Pittsburgh. We'll hit the break. Of course, the 6-12 matchup is always dangerous. We'll get Chris's thoughts and Pat's as well.
I want you to want me.
All right, so the Gamecocks and where they might go, going back to the question before the break, we're going to hear from Lamont Paris in just a moment. So I'm thinking, just based on what the bracketologist Chris and Pat have been saying, oh, by the way, yes, they corrected me. It's 6 versus 11, not 6 versus 12. I've never been good in bracketology math. You know,
that would be a difficult matchup, though, as you pointed out during the break. It's an 11 seed posing as a 12. Yeah,
and the 5-12 is always considered a tough matchup.
Yeah,
and
the
6-11 is considered a tough matchup. So no matter who you find waiting for you, if you're South Carolina or Clemson, 5 or 6 seed, you're going to have a pretty good test in the opening round. So where they might go, I could see this team, depending on who they draw, it all depends on the matchups. And, I mean, I could see them winning a game. I don't know if I can see them getting through the first weekend. I don't know if I can see them getting through the first weekend. What do you think?
Is your concern based on what? What concerns you about
ability to
getting
score,
past somebody in a round of 32?
Yeah, ability to score. I mean, this team is basically a team that's going to score in the 60s, low 70s. Now, they're going to play really good defense in most cases. They have a tendency at times to go very cold from the outside. I just think that they might run up against something in that second round game, run up against a team that they're not going to be able to outscore from that standpoint. That's why I don't know if they can make it into the second weekend.
No, I think that's a fairly reasoned argument. Their defense, though, is Sweet 16 good, in my opinion. I mean, we talked about it last night, led the SEC in scoring defense. But where there is concern is, and also keep in mind, this is a team that doesn't turn it over all that much either. They're very good at distributing the basketball to guys wearing the same color uniforms they are and not throwing it to the other guys. So those are two factors, I think, in their favor of winning a game or two in the tournament. What would be a big negative is they do rely heavily on the three-point shot. I mean, that's their DNA. And if they run into a situation where they're 3 of 18 from the field from beyond the arc, they're going to have a hard time, I think, scoring enough to compensate for the defense that will probably give up 65 points. You still have to score. And that was the one thing that cost them against Tennessee. Think about how well they played Tennessee at home defensively. They just couldn't score against the Vols. And that, if they struggle from the outside, that could hinder them. But I think they can win a couple of games based off the two key factors. They've got older guards, and they're very good on the defensive end of the floor.
So Lamont Paris today, the Gamecocks practice at the Bridgestone Arena, as the teams were able to do, those who wanted to practice who aren't playing tonight, those who wanted to practice, they were able to get a few minutes on the floor. South Carolina was one of those. And then afterwards, with the media from South Carolina that was in Nashville this afternoon, they had a chance to get with Lamont Paris and some of the players and talk with them about the preparation and getting ready for the tournament. This audio courtesy of Gamecock Central, here is what Lamont Paris had to share with the media this afternoon.
You look at the Mississippi State game, I mean, hindsight's 2020, but if you look at it, the result of that game probably didn't really affect the seeding for this tournament. And so, you know, it's like a throwaway game. It's senior night for them. They felt like they really wanted it or needed it as far as their tournament eligibility. But our guys wanted to win. They just wanted to win. So at this point, motivation is not even a thing. You know, some coaches are great motivators, but I think at this point during the season, they have so many things that they're motivated by, and there are times where I've had to push buttons early in the season in order to get guys to do this or not do that. But at this point, they're so locked in and focused and motivating. I think they want to achieve. I think they recognize that what they've done is pretty special. You know, it's the most regular season wins in school history. And I think they know that they've done some special things, but they're not satisfied with that. They want to continue to make this ride last as long as they possibly can. So there's a lot of motivation to continue to move forward and play well and play together and just get as many games together with this particular group as we possibly can.
How different does this feel than maybe this time last year, coming into a 12-13 game playing today versus coming in here with 25 wins?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to have a different level of confidence, belief. It's nice to be able to come in and watch a day's worth of games before you're playing. I had the opportunity maybe to even play on Friday if things had shaken out a different way. But we're confident. They're a confident group. And certainly there's a different feel to it when you come in and have had the season that we've had. I just don't for one second think that the guys don't believe they can beat any team that we play. And you know, obviously there are a lot of teams that feel that way, but they look back on what they've done this season, and there's a lot of evidence that would suggest that they may be right.
How many high school coaches or college over the last 2 months have called you to try and find the secret of how you get guys to have as much chemistry and play with as much effort as you?
I mean, honestly, a lot of people have asked about it, but more people have just acknowledged it. I can't tell you how many people have acknowledged it. People that don't coach, just how many people say how fun it is to watch our guys play out there, just interact. When timeouts get called, the guys that don't even get in the games, it's a ridiculous amount of text messages that people acknowledge that. So it's, you know, you're around them every day, so you, at one point you notice that it was good, but you're around them every single day through 100 and how many other practices we've had at this point and 30 some games. So you take some things for granted, but you get reminders all the time on just how they interact and how they play.
But you got a potential second, or I guess a potential matchup with Arkansas tomorrow. It was like forever ago you guys won at Arkansas. Does anything stand out about them? What do you remember maybe about that first game?
Well, I thought we played well in that first game. I thought we got off to a good start, and we continued it pretty much throughout the game. I don't remember the specifics, but I think we led almost the entire game, if not the entire game. And they're really talented. But, yeah, you know, you get so caught up in watching and preparing for these other games that I hadn't done a lot of Arkansas-related stuff until, you know, just recently. I've done a little bit just in terms of watching our last game with them, our last game with Vandy, and then trying just to prepare our team. We spend most of our time on our own stuff. I've always said that 90% of our game plan is based on what we do, and then that other 10% that relates to them, 90% of that has to do with personnel. And so then, you know, the rest is just a couple wrinkles, actions that a team likes. But so we've been spending a lot of time on us. But I remember when we played well that game.
What's it kind of like, I guess, kind of cramming, like in the regular season, maybe have 3 or 4 days to put in a full scout, maybe practice to the scout in a tournament setting? It's game happens that night. You have to prepare in less than 24 hours and do it again. What's that kind of process like in terms of expediting it into like a 24-hour sequence?
Yeah, once you get going and you're playing, I think you're worried most about just getting rested, like after you play, get rested, get hydrated, you know, try to take a little information in when you can. It is all crammed in. I think at that point, honestly, that's why I think it boils down to what you're doing. Are you able to do the things that you do well, that are precursors to your team having success? Are you able to get to those things? And so I think it's more about you than it is about the other team. That's why the tournament, I think the way we do the scouting report, it does. It lends well to a tournament style setting because, you know, we don't ask the guys to remember 45 plays that the other team, but you're just not going to do that. Possibly ever, but you're definitely not going to do that on a one-night turnaround, right? So get a feel for the actions that they like, what they're trying to do, and most importantly, their personality.
All right, there you go, Lamont Paris, and that game at Arkansas. Gamecocks won that game, and that was back on January 20th in front of 19,200. And they never trailed in this one. Yeah. They had a 19-point lead in this one. They just shot the ball better than Arkansas mm-hmm. did. The Gamecocks shot 52%. Arky shot 37%. Mac had a nice game with 18 points, 9 rebounds, maybe one of his best all-around games of the season. Davis gave him 12, Murray Boyles 11, Cooper 11. They won with Michi Johnson only making 2 of 7, only took 7 shots, scored 8 points. So they did a good job of protecting the basketball at 10 turnovers, not bad at Arkansas, good protection there. So they took it to Arkansas that particular day, if that's who they end up playing tomorrow night, if Arkansas beats Vanderbilt tonight in Nashville in a game that is underway and updated. It's let's take a look at that Vanderbilt-USC game. Vanderbilt is leading going into the half 39-27.
Dude.
So it might be Vanderbilt waiting on the Gamecocks with what would be their 9-22. So they win this one, you know, they'll be 10-22. But they'll have a nice little crowd tomorrow night right there, or tomorrow afternoon. Now it's 41-27 Vandy going into halftime. They're up 14. Obviously, they want to play, and Arkansas does not.
You wonder if they're playing for, as you touched on earlier, you wonder if they're playing for Jerry Stackhouse's job. If mm-hmm. the players realize how bad they've been this year, maybe, obviously, one weekend's probably not going to. If they've made up their mind one way or the other, I don't know, unless they win the tournament and go to the NCAA tournament. I don't know, but heck, it looks like a motivated team for sure. And Arkansas maybe not so much.
Yeah. NC State leading Syracuse 33-29, 127 to go in a half there. Something I want to mention real quick. I've been meaning to bring it up and talk about it because it amazes me. It simply amazes me. And maybe I'm just not capable of seeing it, which is entirely possible. But the overwhelming interest, in the USC women's basketball team cannot be more evident than when you look at the YouTubes that are put out by USC from their various coaches' interviews. The women's post game for South Carolina when they beat LSU the other day, over 75,000 views. 75,000 views. The post game when they beat Tennessee had over 45,000 views. The post game when they, and for example, comparatively speaking, in some ways, now this isn't bad, Lamont Paris's post game after they lost to Tennessee had 8,900 views. But Dawn Staley's preview press conference before the SEC tournament drew 19,000 views.
Makes
sense.
Can
somebody explain this? Can somebody explain this?
Well, considering they play in front of 18,000, it kind of makes sense, on a home game. And but I'd be really fascinated if you ran through YouTube and looked and see how many views that a Caitlin Clark Iowa post game gets, because I still believe South Carolina is the most undervalued and underappreciated and underpublicized number one ranked team in any sport that I can remember. I mean, the other day, and I sent you guys a text.
Here's my question. I've been a sports fan my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Where has this come from for women's sports? The viewing numbers that CBS reported for the Big Ten Women's Championships off the charts. The viewing numbers reported by ESPN for South Carolina LSU, blew it up. Comparatively speaking to other women's broadcasts, but also other sports broadcasts in general. Why all of a sudden has women's sports just taken off? The game is not better than the men's game. It's not. It's not a better game the way they play it. Is it the personalities? Is it the fact that people relate more to the women than they do to the men? Why is it, you know, have we all of a sudden developed this huge national following of women, or national, this fan base of women that just love women's sports? Now, I've never known women, to be, you know, crazy about sports across the board. I mean, maybe I don't know the right women. You tell me.
Well, from a South Carolina perspective, I can tell you why. It's they win, and they're the number one ranked team in the country. That's part of it. Now, if Dawn Staley's team were 9-21 like Jerry Stackhouse's squad, she probably wouldn't get those kind of views. But her team is constantly in the mix to play for a national championship. People like winners. And I think partly from a women's basketball perspective alone, you take the game now versus where it was 20 years ago, and it's not even the same product. I mean, the play on the floor has gotten better. There's been more resources poured into women's sports over the years. Excuse me. There have been more resources poured into women's sports, especially at the collegiate level. And I think you're seeing that college athletic departments, as we've sort of matured, if you will, in the world of sports, realize that there is value in women's athletics as opposed to the good old boys club 30, 40 years ago, where if it weren't football, it didn't matter. So I think there's a lot of reasons why.
Do you think I'm a member of the good old boys club?
I think one thing you have, and I think you'd agree, you have evolved in your opinion of women's sports. Certainly women's basketball has changed. I would say my opinion of the sport from when I was in college to where I am now has changed considerably.
But see, you're married. I hate to get personal with you, but you're married to a female athlete.
Sure. Yeah, my wife played soccer growing up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's in sports too, so that helps, obviously. But I think even if I weren't married to the person that I am, if I were single, I have grown to appreciate, especially South Carolina. I just enjoy watching them play because they're fun to watch and they're good. I just appreciate, it doesn't matter what sport it is, I just appreciate teams that are really good. I've watched Clemson women's soccer. I'll watch Clemson softball because they're very good at that as well. I just think we as a sports society have grown a greater appreciation, and I think the ladies who play the sport deserve a lot of credit for that because they have upped the ante. And you hear Dawn Staley talk about it all the time. People like women's sports now, and I think she's right. Had she said that 25 years ago, she'd have been looked at like she had three heads. Because no one watched. But the game has changed. The personalities, I think, as you pointed out, have certainly changed. And why was there so much fervor about the LSU-USC game from the other from this past Sunday? It wasn't just because it was the last two national champions. It wasn't because it's the SEC championship game. It's because it is a rivalry that is turning into a very heated rivalry and had a nasty ending to it. And that's, you know, whether it's men's or women's sports, we're drawn to controversy and we're drawn to, you know, polarizing figures. And let's face it, Kim Mulkey is a polarizing figure, whether she coaches the women's team or a men's team.
Mm-hmm. Marketing, visibility, and exposure, along with resources like Chris mentioned, that has all stepped up incrementally over the years as well. And then also something you mentioned there, Phil, where now I think more women are becoming avid fans. For instance, my dad and I have had season tickets to USC men and women's basketball my entire life. He's had those since before I was born. I've gone with them. It was always like our thing. We'd go to these games together. And I remember going to the USC women's games in the 90s as a kid and in early 2000s, and there'd be a couple hundred people in the stands.
Yeah.
And, like, the amount of times I was in the halftime show, because they would basically look around and be like, who wants to come out here? And I'd always run down there and have my arm waving. I was probably in halftime show 20-plus times as a kid. It was just fun. But now my mom goes with him far more often than I do. She loves going to the games. And I hope I'm not making too much of a general statement there, but I do know significantly more girls and women today that go to those games. Both of my nieces love going to games. They now have season tickets with my brother and his wife, and so they all go to every single girls game as well. But also just, we've heard Coach Staley and a number of other coaches or kind of the more recognizable faces in women's basketball over the years talk about a need for more television coverage, more commercials, and now we're seeing that. We've seen in recent years ESPN, Fox Sports, and then the major, the CBS, NBC, Fox, ABC, all take a better or a bigger stance on visibility and getting women's basketball on television. So I think you're seeing it far more often, and the more it's there, the more people are going to start watching it, especially if it's a better product, an improved product, like Chris mentioned, compared to what it was 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And then also just the amount of money being pumped into it from a marketing standpoint, where you have commercials now with Sabrina Ionescu is in commercials all the time along with Steph Curry. And we see Asia Wilson in national commercials. We see recognizable women's basketball players on national commercials, whether it be a Subway, a Duracell, a Budweiser, like whatever. I'm just throwing out random sponsors. Sorry for the free plug for those guys. But we're seeing a lot more visibility, and that then I think piques people's curiosity as well and makes them want to watch. We're seeing far more money pumped into these teams. You're now seeing better equipment across the board, better uniforms, just better everything. Remember, we just a few years ago in the NCAA tournament had that kind of, I guess, scandal. I don't know if that's too much of a word, where we saw the weight room for the men's compared to the weight room for the women, and it was just night and day. And even that was eye-opening, and we've seen significant improvements to resources even just in the last 3, 4, 5 years.
Okay, we got to jump to recruiting before we run out of time tonight. Our recruiting report is brought to you by, of course, good friends over at Seawells, and you got a couple more days this week to indulge yourself in the daily luncheon buffet, 11 to 2, best in the business you can find anywhere. Nothing better than what Seawells will serve up to you when you go in there for the daily luncheon buffet, 11 to 2 for only $14.50. You need the very best in the catering business, then just give the folks at Seawells a call at 803-771-7385. Let them help make your event a memorable experience. You can also visit their website at SeawellsCateringSC.com. So tonight we talk about a linebacker, Kamar Archie, 6'1", 215, from the Hun School in Princeton, New Jersey. A lot of good players have come out of the Hun School. I just envision guys wearing armor, carrying spears, looking to ransack little towns, you know, the
Being
Huns.
Led by Attila.
Yeah, exactly. Coach Attila. Well, he's a good-looking athlete, I'll tell you. Offers from coast to coast. He cut his list to Clemson, USC, Tennessee, Michigan, Rutgers, Oklahoma. Visited Michigan in January, and last weekend he was at Clemson, and he and Wes Goodwin have a very strong relationship going back to when he was in camp as a freshman, and they have continued that relationship. So Clemson is in very good shape from that regards. As far as the relationship, he likes the way Goodwin coaches. He likes the way Clemson uses their linebackers. Love the atmosphere on the campus and all of that. So Clemson's in really good shape there. The visit put them in an even stronger spot. Right now, he said Clemson, Michigan, two places he's visited are very high with him. South Carolina, Pete Limbo made the first contact, and Clayton White has picked it up from there. And he says they, too, have got a really good relationship. White's been very consistent with him. They talk every week, and they have talked about him coming in for a visit. He plans to get in for a visit sometime this spring. He's also talked to Shane Beamer. Thinks the Gamecocks are going to have a really good team and are on the move in the SEC. So he's got an official with Clemson May 31st and one with Oklahoma June 21st. He also wants to visit Michigan this spring. He might take one to Texas A&M as well, though he did not include the Aggies in his top six. Did I mention his top six? Clemson, USC, Tennessee, Michigan, Rutgers, and Oklahoma. He's been to Rutgers like 11 times during his recruiting process. Paul Strelow of Tiger Illustrated reported that highly recruited offensive tackle David Sanders was to make a return visit to Clemson today. He's from Charlotte. He's going to come in with some teammates. Of course, he was in over the weekend as well. 2026 offensive tackle Zion Gillis of Carver's Bay plans to visit USC next week. He was at Clemson last weekend. He was offered by Coastal Carolina on Tuesday. USC offered 2026 defensive end Jermaine Kinsler, 6'7", 260, of Oradell, New Jersey. And USC target tight end Marshall Pritchett was offered by Arizona. There you go, recruiting on this Wednesday edition of Sports Talk. Can we squeeze in a final call from Rocky? If we can in the final 60 seconds, we can't. Rocky gone? Rocky be gone? Rocky Ricardo?
I've got a fascinating stat since we don't have time for Rocky to close out the the show, ACC Men's Basketball Twitter page just sent out a note that today the Atlantic Coast Conference Men's Basketball Tournament surpassed 6 million attendees. And they have a picture of the 6th millionth fan to go through the ACC tournament. That's a remarkable feat for that tournament. But how disappointing is it that it occurred in Washington, D.C., where they don't have a school located? Maryland's long gone. Wouldn't that have been great at Greensboro?
Absolutely. I can promise you the 6 million didn't come from the afternoon sessions in recent years. Have a great night. We'll see you from Nashville tomorrow.